Our work session's usually a little less formal than the council meeting. They'll start at 7, and so we'll be having some discussion here. Our first item on our list is that we have the Pleasant Grove Strawberry Days Royalty here. And we'll turn the time over to you guys. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Allie Duncan. I am in Pleasant Grove 2012, and I'm here with my attendants, Chelsea Richards, Allie Howe, Jason Millett, and Heather Huger, and we have our rodeo royalty here as well. And we are here to invite the city of Cedar Hills to the Strawberry Days, which is June 18th through 23rd. We start out on Tuesday night with our concert in the park, and that is really great for families. We have free strawberries and cream, and a vicious band. It's a really great evening. On Wednesday morning, we have our baby contest. We'll be the judges, and then that evening, there's a children's parade. And then on Friday, we have our husband day, which is really fun for like families of like little kids. And there's a piety contest that involves us, which is always pretty exciting. And it's just a fun opportunity for all families to come, and there's like a bunch of activities that the little kids can do. So.
And then Saturday at 10 a.m. is our grand parade. And there's lots of local floats and bands that participate in it, and it's a great family activity.
And I'm Chastity Arnold. I'm the first attendant of the Strawberry Days Rodeo Royalty. And Wednesday night is the first night of our rodeo. And Barkey Rodeo is our stock contractor this year. They have great stock. So we have the top PRCA Cowboys coming in, so that'll be a really good show. And Friday and Saturday night is fireworks. And Wednesday is our family night. So tickets are cheaper for the children. They have to bring that money out. Some fun. And also on Saturday will be fireworks as well.
Great.
And then we brought you guys a berry cheesecake just to say welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can sit right here.
Yeah, you can sit right here by Jenny. So. Truth be told, that's the truth. Well, thank you.
Can I ask?
Go ahead, please.
Can I ask you ladies some questions real quick?
Sure.
I just want to know, in your platforms you do service, could you tell us what your platforms were?
Do you want each one of us?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
My platform was Healthy Living for a Healthy Future, and I just went into elementary schools and just shared with them some fun ways to get more active and make healthier choices. And I was also helping my drill team plan a 5K run just to help the community get more active as well. And yeah, I'm still working towards it.
Okay.
I actually did mine on awareness for water. And because 75% of our population is chronically dehydrated, and dehydration is the number one cause for daily fatigue and headache, and you're just a lot more focused. So that was kind of mine. It was just about educating people with like posters about the importance of that. And it's kind of cool because it's an individual issue, but it's also a global issue with different countries that have unclean water.
My platform
is
focused on teaching kids in schools how to serve and bringing more service opportunities to them. So we have several clubs at our high school and several teams do service projects with some of the programs that we have throughout like, the community. And so we just worked on teaching kids how service and education connected can benefit lives.
Mine was on breast cancer awareness because I had an aunt and a grandmother die so close to each other. And it's prevalent in my family. And we did a Brave Code Treat for the Cure and then a Bowl for the Cure, which was just raising awareness of early detection.
And then I did a danger for distracted driving because my grandpa was hit and killed by a distracted driver. And so that was a big issue for me. And so I went to the Pleasant Grove High School and I talked to all the drivers in classes about how dangerous it is, and I had them sign a waiver saying they wouldn't drive while distracted.
That's it.
So I guess I just want to know, like, is your stuff ongoing, and how did that, any of you guys can answer this, like, how did those platforms affect you, and obviously you continue to move on. Was there anything, like, inspirational that took place, or that happened, or?
I chose my platform because healthy living, mine involves healthy eating habits as well as physical activity,
And those two topics are very important to me. And I've actually had a grandmother as well that has passed away from poor health habits. And I just, so many people in my family have always struggled with that. And my mom has hypothyroidism. And so focusing on that, because it is so important to me, I know it can benefit others. And I know that in America right now, we suffer from, well, and all over the world, we suffer from poor eating habits and poor physical activity habits. And so I just know that that's something that all of us can work on throughout our entire lives. And so that's why I choose my platform, and that's why it's so dear to my heart.
So being a Strawberry Day royalty, and now that you guys have all become that, what do you do throughout the year? I'm just wondering what your activities are, because we don't have a royalty.
Okay.
And so I think that it would be interesting for us to know what you guys do and how you affect the community and how you guys are spokeswomen for that.
It's so much fun. We are super involved in Strawberry Day. We are there at basically every activity, right? And we just help out whenever we can, wherever we can. And we make appearances. Like this morning, we were actually on Good Things Utah promoting Strawberry Days, and just, we've gone to a few other city council meetings just to invite everyone to Strawberry Days. That's basically what we are, very involved in Strawberry mm-hmm. Days. But we are in many of the parades for Utah. And next year, I will go compete for Miss Utah, which is very exciting. And this whole year, we will continue to work on our platforms just to raise awareness for whatever we chose throughout our community.
So was it a big deal that Pleasant Grove and Strawberry Day royalty was part of the Miss America pageant? I mean, was that a big deal to you guys? I mean, was that important?
That
it was, that they're connected. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, it was awesome for us. That we competed in a pageant with 18 girls, and it's very tough competition this year. So we also so blessed to be in the royalty. We're also excited to be able to represent Pleasant Grove. And we had a tough competition, and in the end, we all ended up in the royalty, so we're super excited, and we didn't know about Strawberry Days and just whatever else our director, whatever else our director needs us for.
Yeah. I was just curious, because the past council, it was an issue about the swimsuit competition. And
right.
So that's one of the things why the city of Cedar Hills does not have royalty and participate with Miss America.
You know what? That's a good subject. Actually, in Pleasant Grove, we have a rule that you had to wear a robe for it. And so that covered a lot of people's issues with the whole swimsuit.
And was it an issue for you guys personally, or because you knew that going into it to sign up
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
to participate in
for
it?
A lot of like what makes the Miss America program so good, yes, that is an issue for a lot of people, but we love the Miss America program because it's not like other pageant programs. It's so based on service, really. Most of us, it was not about all the other things, it was about our platforms. Like, we really learned how to serve and fell in love.
And I can also just find that because I participated in the USA pageant, and I don't know if any of you guys know pageants at all, but the USA and American system are very different. And I noticed that with the American system, it was so much more than just a pageant and beauty contest. It was more about service and what you've done to help your community and how you've bettered yourself throughout the whole process.
So. Well, I like, one of my favorite parts about participating is the swimsuit or fitness section is actually only 15% of your total score. The biggest parts are talent and interview. And I worked for a long time about being more well-spoken and being to interview, like, it was kind of a lot like they'd ask you about you, and so I value the interview skills that I take in from that.
Anyone besides Stephanie have anything?
Hey, Stephanie probably covered it.
Just hoping to convince the value.
Appreciate you guys coming. Appreciate what you do for the greater community. You know, we're neighbors here, and that means a lot. And I know my family loves going to the Strawberry Days, so appreciate the service that you guys are providing for that. So, thank you.
Thank you. See you guys at the rodeo.
Okay. Alrighty. next on our agenda is to have a discussion. And this is in follow-up to some comments that we've received at some prior council meetings. And we were going to send this to the Planning Commission and thought it'd be best for us to maybe have a little discussion amongst ourselves of what we'd like the Planning Commission to look at so that when they get it, maybe they have a little more direction. So specifically, there are two items that we had talked about referring to them. Excuse me, one of them was talking about corner lots and the other one's about fencing. And so I want to spend just a few minutes on those and have a discussion here on the council of what we're looking at there. So let's talk about the corner lots. And we started off kind of specific on sheds, but maybe the issue is actually broader than that. And if I may add a little bit of context there, so every yard has setbacks in it, and you're restricted on what you're able to do in the setbacks versus what you're able to do in the rest of your yard. And corner lots are unique in that they have a corner setback, a side setback that's much larger than the setback on the other homes. And so we've traditionally in the city been very restrictive on what those people can do in those corner lots, actually to the degree that sometimes a large percentage of the lot becomes, I don't want to say unusable, highly less usable. And we've required fences to be set in quite a bit, and we've restricted what can be done there. And I think that when prior city fathers did that, it was trying to make sure that you don't create an environment where you have sidewalk fence and you have no open areas, and that affects some of the beautification of the neighborhoods. And so I do think that we have more beautiful neighborhoods because of either having park strips or side setbacks. But as time has gone forward, it is my opinion that we need less and less laws telling people what they can do. People in our community tend to want to do nice things, and when we try and mandate what a nice thing is, sometimes we're not as complete in our definition as might be otherwise available. And so we might be telling people that they can only do certain things when there might be other things that are also in good taste and don't negatively impact the values of the community, the welfare of the community, while doing that. And so we started with some sheds, and I know that you heard in the council meeting a few months ago about some sheds in those areas. And then as I've thought about it, even look at some things such as in some areas of the city, on a corner lot, if you have a side entry garage, then you have one set of rules, and if you have a front entry garage, you have another set of rules. And I've wondered if we're not at a time where in some of the parts of our city that have a little bit smaller lots, the fifth acre type lots, that we shouldn't allow people to do more things because we have high quality people living in those neighborhoods who they might want that third car garage, and that might be the thing that enables them to stay in our community versus maybe looking outside of our community. And I certainly would love those good people to be able to stay and not to leave simply because they need a lot of storage space, and what they would do would be in good taste to enhance the neighborhood, but we're telling them no in spite of all the great reasons that we had in the past to maybe have said no, but maybe there's a way we can say yes. And so that's what I'd like for us to discuss a little bit is to see if there's support on the council of having the Planning Commission look at those corner uses and say, can we allow some sheds? Could we allow third car garage? Could we do this? Could we do that? And maybe be a little bit more relaxed and yet still meet the goals of the city as far as maintaining high property values and a quality place to live. So my opinion is we can, and I'd like for the Planning Commission to look at being either more restrictive on those corner setbacks, either being less restrictive on what the setbacks is or less restrictive on what they can do in those setbacks. But maybe you guys are very happy where things are at, and so we shouldn't send something to the Planning Commission if there's no appetite for change there.
There's no harm in looking into it, so I think that sounds good.
I agree. I think that are we talking specifically about the fencing or?
Well, on the corner lots right now it says sheds, but I think it's more holistic. It's like, to me, it's, are there areas of the city where on a corner lot we have, I think it's a 30-foot side setback, and would we be willing to let it go to maybe a 20, which is still a lot more than most side setbacks, but allow someone to have a third-car garage there, for example.
Yeah.
Or a shed in that area, like Mr. Siemens and Mr. Wetzel talked about at the prior council meeting.
I'd like to look into it. I'd like to see if it makes sense to be a little bit less restrictive about, you know, our community. I think that there's value.
I agree as well. I'm a big advocate of property rights, and so I would love to see what we can do on that.
So I guess my thought is that I'd like the two specific things that I'd like the Planning Commission to look at is one, allowing something like a third car garage in some of those corner setbacks or something of the sort. And then two would be we had Mr. Siemens came in and he said, if you recall, that he had his wife had been very nice and purchased for him this very nice shed. I've seen it. It's a high quality shed, and it's in his side setback on the corner. And if it was smaller, it could go there, but it can't go there because it's a little too big. And I think it looks nice personally, and I don't see where the size in his particular instance should negate that. And so I'd like for us to look and see, can't we be a little more flexible with that? I personally don't have a problem with what he's done, but I'd like for us to consider that. So
plan my 2 cents?
Add more than 2 cents if you want.
Okay, I may take 3.
Okay.
So having been on the Planning Commission, having been involved with our HOA and some very small properties in kind of our neck of the woods, I would be more apt to look at, like you said, sheds, maybe more temporary type structures, but I would be a little hesitant to change the requirements on the setback for an actual home.
Okay.
Just because I know people have fought really hard to try to get that, and then to go back and say, oh, you know what, we're going to change it for the last 5% of homes that are available. I would rather see us put sheds or adjust fencing and do some other things like that, but maybe not necessarily change the footprint of the home to allow that.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate what you're saying. It's really hard when someone's told no, 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 and then all of a sudden you say yes, and someone already did what they're able to do. Of course, the other side of that is if no is not the right answer, then keep saying no is...
I'm more than happy to look at it both ways.
Yeah.
My personal preference would be, I would love to look at changing it for sheds, detached garages, fences, landscaping,
those types of things.
All of that. I am all in favor of it.
I think that one of the things, too, that we'll have to be careful with here, and this will apply to the next thing with the fencing, too, is there are CC&Rs in areas that are going to override whatever we do. And so just because the city says you may do X doesn't mean that your neighborhood CC&Rs are going to allow you to do that,
right,
too. But
the Planning Commission give us a recommendation on both options.
Mm-hmm. Greg, Cliff, do you guys need any more direction than that from the council? Do you know what the council would like you to talk about on the corner?
I just wrote it all back down here.
Okay.
We'll take a look at it and see, and I'll express all of your concerns about it.
I think it's really a very holistic, what is the corner side setback and what can be done in that?
Okay. The other thing I think we may need to look at also is because a lot of corner setbacks are kind of set that way because they have a stop sign next to them.
Yeah,
you get into kind of a safety issue. Where
the clear visionary is going to be
that
different.
Triangle right there at the corner, I think, is something that we need to watch for also.
Yeah, for me, and to that point, I appreciate that, is specifically the side setback behind the front setback. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about that front corner where the stop sign or the clear visionaries are, but we're talking about 30 feet back and in someone's backyard. I know in one of the prior neighborhoods I lived in, I had two neighbors across the street that are in corners, and they both had to move their fences in quite a bit because in that neighborhood the sidewalks are on the street, and so instead of having planter strip, the sidewalk goes right up to the curb, and then there was this very large grassy area that these people had a very nice backyard if they could have used a little bit more of that area, but it wound up being by and large wasted space. Wouldn't you say, Barry, in that neighborhood, you have some corner lots that people don't get to use their corners because of that. So.
Right.
Okay. All right. So the other one was fencing, and fencing seems to be one of these things that about every 2 years we subject ourselves to the wonderful process of reviewing fencing. Fencing is something that everyone has an opinion on. They just may not know it yet, but here also historically the city came in and said we're going to set some higher standards, and as people voluntarily decide whether they want to locate in our community or not, they'll be able to have these high standards and we'll get some high quality homes. And I think that having those standards back in the late 90s and early 2000s was good, but as time has gone forward, it's hard to have an ordinance keep track with technology. And for example, a lot of our areas used to require white vinyl fences because in 1999 a white vinyl fence was considered by many to be the premium fence, and yet at this point in time I'm not sure that everyone would agree that it's the only premium fence. In fact, there's very nice wrought iron fences and concrete fences and some very nice cedar fences in my opinion, and there's some different things that you can do that are very nice and tasteful. And so we've slowly changed some of those things. At the same point in time, we do have areas where, as they were designed with smaller lots, sometimes 5,000 or 6,000 square feet. And so the idea was, as the city, the then city worked with the developers, was to say we want some open view areas to compensate for these small lots. We don't want them to feel like small little cages like you sometimes get, for example, maybe in California where you have small lots. And so we wanted to have some flexibility on density, but still maintain some viewpoints. And so that's what drove that. And so at this point in time, we kind of have this two problems. Assuming that that is a problem, is number one, we have an ordinance that says that, but then number two, a lot of this is into development agreements, CC&Rs, and HOA rules. And so the question is as a city, are we willing to look at that? Once again, remembering that doesn't necessarily take away what the HOA or the CC&R might say, but are we willing to reconsider that? And Greg wants to say something about fences because he loves talking about fences. Or Scott does because he's gone down this path before.
So are there particular issues or is this a general review?
I think that Jenny had some examples of some spots where she had been approached by some people, and then...
Can you share that?
Yes, please.
So I was approached by a resident who lived on Sugarloaf. His backyard backs up onto Canyon Road. There are 14 houses right there on that Sugarloaf property, and they have the wrought iron fence. And kitty corner to them on Canyon Road, those neighbors have white vinyl fences and then rock fences. Those people on Sugarloaf have been told that they cannot have privacy fences there. They can only have the wrought iron.
Because
it's on the trail.
Yes and no. Yes, but not exclusively yes. How's that?
So, of course, he would like a privacy fence because with that wrought iron, there's people constantly walking up and down there, and sure, they're right in their yard. So he would like, he has a privacy fence on the sides, but he can't have one on the back, and he would like to see if the city will change the ordinance. Another resident on Sugarloaf does have a privacy fence, but they had to scoot it in several feet, so they have a privacy fence, and then their yard, and then the wrought iron fence.
So the item there is so if you're thinking about this in your mind, if you're starting the canyon and you're heading south on Canyon Road, there on Red Oaks and in Juniper Heights area, there's on the right hand side, on the west side, there's some cement fence there.
Right.
And that wound up being the first exception to the rule, because the rule at that time was houses along parks, trail corridors, and major streets, including Canyon Road, required open fencing. And as the city went to put in sidewalk along that Red Oaks, Juniper Heights area, the grades were such, if I remember right, Dave, that we couldn't put the sidewalk in without retaining. And so that fence actually was installed with a grant by UDOT to serve not just as a fence, but really, to a large degree, as a retaining wall to make that sidewalk feasible. That's an issue that doesn't necessarily apply one-to-one with areas in Avenue and Canyon Heights and Sugarloaf and those areas, but that's led people at times to ask why. So.
And then in addition to that, there were several cars that went off the road right there into their backyard. Yeah. So a safety issue. So they thought that the concrete fence would be a better barrier.
Although cars do go through concrete fences.
They can go through those.
But it slows them down quite a bit.
It slows them down.
But they're not through.
Yeah.
So that was the issue too, is just the elevation.
Yeah. And then I think kind of, oh, Go ahead. I was going to add just, you know, then secondary that is often the comment that happens is people say, well, if the city's going to tell me what kind of fence I have to have, then are they going to maintain it? And the answer's been no, but that's always something that gets brought up in a discussion point, especially as I think wrought iron hasn't been all those who envisioned it 10 years ago thought it would be. In fact, in some ways, it's inferior to some of the aluminum products that are at now. But
that actually was one of his other complaints, was that they are constantly fixing that wrought iron fence. It's just rusting away.
Yeah.
So I'll be honest. I've probably taken years off my life by discussing fencing issues in our HOA. Being the president for our HOA, I spent a considerable amount of time in our HOA on this. Our HOA is bound by a development agreement with the city where we cannot allow anything but a wrought iron fence.
Yep.
Is the Cedars East that same way? Because I know they have the requirement for wrought iron.
Sure, that's in an HOA.
It's not an HOA, but I believe they have CC&Rs that require it. And so
the only one that has a CC&R up there is the Cedars townhome. All the rest of the homes are not in a CC&R.
Well, they're not an HOA, yes, but I think they still have a CC&R. You don't need an HOA to have a CC&R.
They're not an HOA.
But they're still bound by the CC&Rs.
Mm-hmm.
But is that in a development agreement?
I would question
agreement?
That because they, as residents, I think, got together and said, we're done with all of it.
I don't know for sure there, but I know, for example, Juniper Heights has CC&Rs, and our CC&Rs can only be changed every, I think it's every 30 years. And there's a certain date, and if you don't change them on that date with a certain supermajority opinion, they automatically renew for another 30 years. So I don't know what the answer is with theirs. I haven't reviewed theirs, but that is one of the issues is even if as a city we say we might be okay with this, the CC&Rs may not enable them, or a development agreement may not enable right. them to actually do. And so I think we have to be careful that we don't pass an ordinance saying, yeah, go do whatever you want, and people read our ordinance and start doing whatever they want, and then they have a neighbor suing them because mm-hmm. they didn't follow their CC&Rs mm-hmm. that they right. didn't know about, but it causes neighbor issues, not because of someone trying to be bad, but just because
CNR people
trying, don't know.
Actually isn't found in the CC&Rs, it's found in the development agreement, which is even harder to change than our CC&Rs.
It takes making the developer happy and the city happy, which
right,
you might make one or the other. But
the whole reason that we got the density that we have is because the city said, you know what, if you guys will put in wrought iron fence and be bound by that in the development agreement, yep. we'll allow you to push those setbacks closer together,
yep.
which increase the density that the developer could get for our neighbor. So that's why we're kind of stuck with what we've got. But I know we'll have residents up in arms and backwards and sideways by allowing vinyl fence if it doesn't allow...
Or
not.
Or not allowed.
I just know this is going to be a hot topic.
So one of the things that I would like the Planning Commission to look into is, first of all, if they are bound by a development agreement on Sugarloaf, and secondly, that developer is gone now. It no longer exists. So does that mean that they can do nothing?
Well,
it's going to say that there's still certain... restrictions in place that can be changed through there's going to be a process usually stated in there to say how they can be changed. Like our Juniper Heights is in another 24 or 25 years we can make some changes if we want to. If one of us remembers and has it on our calendar and still lives there to do so. That's the tough thing about CC&Rs. Everyone thinks that they're protecting when they buy their house, but sometimes they wind up being your enemy after you do it.
And I think most of the development agreements have to have a supermajority along with full approval from the city.
Yeah,
supermajority
of the residents?
Uh-huh.
Which in this case, there's only 14 of them.
Well, it'd be of the subdivision, not of the...
It's not of the owners.
Well, I don't remember what they're... Yeah. There's going to be an area stated in that document that says who's within it. There's a map, and it's going to be of those people. So, and this is what winds up becoming kind of the logistical problem is you might have 100% of the people along Canyon Road who say we all want to change it, but if there are people on the other side of the fence also are part of that area, and maybe the next street over are also part of the area, then you have to get a supermajority of all those people, not just the people who...
And that's what we run into.
And that's, in the Cedars, they find that with their supermajority, by the time, it's not supermajority of those who vote, it's supermajority of those who own a lot, and so you basically need 100% of people to show up to their HOA meeting
which is
in favor of something.
To get.
Yeah, and and that I would call is actually the easy way of doing it compared to, like, I know what our CC&Rs are, that you can't even have the meeting to discuss it. So
I think that would be the first step, and it's finding out if they are bound by a development agreement, and if so, what these particular residents have to do if they really want to pursue a change.
Okay, so my other question on that is, because Sugarloaf Back's one of our trails,
mm-hmm.
that we have the requirements on a trail to have a...
They're double gotcha, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Canyon Road and on a trail,
yeah.
So...
Mm-hmm. Do we have... So the point of on a trail, yeah. Okay, is that you don't want to, like, make a corridor where it's unsafe for someone to be on a trail.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have full privacy fences, say, on both sides of the trail,
mm-hmm.
then no one can see what's going on that trail,
right.
And stuff can happen.
Right.
And so that's why they have... You know, where you have to have a percentage of it open
mm-hmm.
on your fence.
And maybe that's the place where I can say I know that I would definitely favor this change, and that is if we had a trail corridor that was greater than some number, 120 feet wide, then I don't think you have that problem. I think of like the Bonneville Shoreline Trail,
mm-hmm.
that's very wide, that doesn't have the same issue as if we were talking about...
like the trail behind Forest Creek.
Some of the Forest Creek Trail where, especially as you move further south towards Deerfield and it gets very narrow there, then you might have a different issue with that versus on some of these wider trails. So I think that's an easy spot for me to say we should look at. But some of the other stuff, I feel like it gets difficult fast. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be looked at, just that the council needs to be pretty clear on what they want and the Planning Commission needs to be willing to do it because it always winds up...
So. Again, I'm just of the opinion that I would like residents to have the opportunity to do what they feel is best for their personal property. And if they feel like they have little kids and they want a fence, if it's something that we need to look at again, then I would prefer that we at least look at it and not just say no, because that's the way it's always been.
Okay, so Greg, what if we did, this is, I don't want the city issuing any type of legal opinion on whether they're bound by them or not, but maybe we can look at it and just kind of say it looks pretty easy or it looks pretty hard. And if it looks like in that particular instance that it's pretty hard, then maybe we come back to the council here and say, okay, you guys really want the Planning Commission to go down this path if it looks unlikely that someone's really going to have the outcome they want because of a CC&R or a development agreement type thing. And if it looks pretty easy, then let's have it come back. We'll talk about it again, and then we'll send it forward. And then, assuming that we send it back, then let's also look at the width of the trail corridor type thing to see if there aren't some corridors that are wide enough that we don't have that problem with the alleyway. Is that what I hear everyone saying?
Didn't we have another resident at the same time as the shed talk about his fence?
Yes.
A couple of them.
Yes. We did. We had Mr. Nielsen, I think, was his name. I'm skipping right now. I haven't changed emails with him. But, he also is looking at that. His is a little bit different that he's wanting to talk about fences in his front yard, but that might be something also to discuss is front yard fences. So.
And his is more of a safety or security issue because he wants to kind of compound his property and keep people out to some extent.
His is also on a corner.
On a busy road.
On a busy on the Canyon Road issue with
next to a
stop sign. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's have staff work on the fencing, but refer the corner lot issue over to Planning Commission, and then maybe hear a little bit more of if that's Pandora's box or not. So, okay. Someone have the time? What time is it? 6:45. Okay. Let me just go quickly through the agenda, and then we'll take a break before our council meeting. We'll start that as close to 7 as we can. Let's see here. Item number 7, we don't have back yet, and so we'll be continuing that to the next meeting. Item number 8 is the utility rate study. We saw the preliminary presentation of that, it seems like about 6 weeks or so ago. Does that sound right? So maybe a month ago? Okay. A month ago, and so this would be approving it. Now, approving the study that's been submitted, doesn't change any utility rates, just simply say that we're taking what they presented to us and adopting it as being the correct assessment of our infrastructure and where things are going. Item number 9 is the public hearing on item number 10, which is the adoption of the budget for this next upcoming year, the 2013 budget year. We're not at a point yet where I believe we should be adopting that, but we certainly want to discuss it and then continue it. We'll have the public hearing tonight, and then we can continue the public hearing too. And then we'll want to plan on having that adopted at the next council meeting, so if everyone can get any questions, concerns, or changes to staff on the budget, that'd be great. Item number 11 is the durability bond for the Walmart subdivision. This is dealing with the public improvements such as sidewalks. It doesn't deal with things that are covered in the development agreement like landscaping, trees, those types of things. Dave and I spent some time down there actually today. There are some things that we're going to push them on the development agreement side of things at the same time, but in our review, the improvements have passed durability and so the bond needs to be released. Item number 12 is discussing the completion of the basement of this building. We'll talk about that a little bit more then. And 13 is talking about our city office space and some of the changes we're on utilizing the public works building for that space instead of any type of new construction. So trying to do more with what we have, even though we've saved the money, I think there's a better place we could spend that money. And then we'll end up with just a discussion item on goals and the culture for the city. And then we do have some closed-door executive session issues dealing with litigation and confidence, I think. And so we'll talk about those things at the end of the meeting. But if we can keep that in mind, then we'll have those items too. So before we close the work session, anyone have anything that they want to talk about or throw out there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll go ahead and close the work session then and plan on starting at 7. So. Okay.